والصلاه والسلام على سيدنا محمد واله الطيبين الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد
واللعن الدائم على اعدائهم اجمعين. Some of the brothers evidently aren't satisfied with the topic of the speeches and what I've been talking about. They had conveyed through one of the brothers that they would like the speeches to be more challenging, I assume more philosophically or mystically oriented. Unfortunately, I don't really agree with that viewpoint too much. I think our mission as Muballighun is to try to educate our communities around the world about Islam, about what our duties are. We can go on and speak about philosophy for many days, about Irfan Nadhari for many days, but at the end of the day, that won't get us any closer. That won't get us any closer to God, and it won't help us achieve knowledge of Islam that will be beneficial for us. Throughout the Quran, the story of Moses is repeated how many times? The topic of hell and heaven is repeated how many times? The issue of taqwa is repeated how many times? So, I think it's actually one of the symptoms of the Western worldview, where we want something to satisfy, you know, to be a little on the arcane side. You know, we've seen all the movies and about all these mystical beings and existences, and want something to satisfy that aspect. I think our main purpose and mission, inshallah ta'ala, should be to help our communities grow, not to make a good show, not to make good clips on YouTube. And unfortunately, I'm not a good speaker, so you can either bear my speeches or I do not insist to take up your time. Although I'm open to the suggestions that the brothers have, and if you think that there is some other topic that may be more beneficial to the community, not just a matter of challenging something that is actually more beneficial, and open to your suggestions, and inshallah we can consider those suggestions. Please recite it subtly.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Please recite another salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
So the topic I started was about Imam Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. We talked about the benefits of his existence while he is in occultation. Yesterday we talked about the circumstances surrounding his birth and how those led to his going into occultation. Today, I would like to say a few words concerning the state of the Shia during the age of occultation, during the Asr al-Ghaybah, inshallah ta'ala, and then we'll continue with it tomorrow. One of the main concepts that is repeated in our riwayat concerning Shia and their state during the age of occultation, the Asr al-Ghaybah, is that they genuinely feel the absence of their master, that they feel the pain, that their life is made difficult on that account. And so they don't just go about living normal lives like anyone else. Okay, this feeling of pain, this feeling of the absence of the master, the absence of the Lord, the absence of the Khalifatullah, figures prominently in their lives. And this is one of the determining factors of the Shia during the age of occultation. If this is not present in us, we must doubt our being Shia. This is one of the determining factors of the Shia during the age of occultation. There are numerous riwayat that point to this issue, but one, I think very telling one, is this one that I've chosen to read to you. عن يمان التمار كنا عند أبي عبد الله جلوسا. We were sitting with Imam Sadiq عليه السلام. فقال إن لصاحب هذا الغيبة فقال إن لصاحب هذا الأمر غيبة. The person who is going to establish the rule of the Ahl al-Bayt, he is going to have an occultation. المتمسك فيها بدينه كالخارط للقتادي. The person, the Shia, who maintains his faith during this age, is like one who gets a bush of qatad. Qatad are desert shrubs that are full of thorns, full of very tough thorns, very long and tough thorns. A person who maintains his faith during the age of occultation is like one who takes one of these, a branch of this bush of qatad, and rubs it against the direction of the thorns, so that all the thorns go into his hand. Okay, imagine you have a branch of this qatad and you're rubbing it this way, so that all the thorns go into your hand. How painful can that be? It's very painful. It will probably tear your hand apart. المتمسك فيها بدينه كالخارط للقتاد ثم قال هكذا بيده. And he showed, he did the same thing. فأيكم يمسك شوك القتاد بيده. Which one of you has actually tried to pierce his hand, tried to hold the thorns of qatad in his hand? This is the feeling that should be with us. If we claim to be Shia, if we assume to be Shia, this is how we should feel. If we get up in the morning, we go to work, we do everything as if we were just like any other American, without feeling any different, without feeling that we need to do anything special, we do not harbor this pain, if we do not harbor this this feeling of the absence of the Master, of the Lord, we are not actually true Shiras according to this Rawaya. And it is for this reason, again, that we have many Rawaya that say that one of the signs of the appearance of Imam Mahdi is that most of the people who believe in Imam Mahdi lose their faith in Imam Mahdi before his reappearance. Okay. Now this doesn't necessarily mean to actually renounce Imam Mahdi. Okay. It doesn't mean actually renouncing Imam Mahdi. Okay. But just the fact that you do not incorporate that pain into your life and act according to that pain, act according to that knowledge, act according to that belief, the failure to act according to that belief, you're actually losing. We've actually lost faith in Imam Mahdi. This rawaya is from Imam Hassan al-Askari. Qala Ahmad ibn Ishaq. It's a lengthy rawaya. I've chosen only two lines of it here. Qala Ahmad ibn Ishaq. Qala Abu Muhammad al-Hassan al-Askari. Inna ghaybatahu latatool. The occultation, the absence of Imam Mahdi is going to last for a very long time. حتى يرجع عن هذا الأمر أكثر القائلين به. Most of those who assume to believe in Imam Mahdi, they will lose faith. فلا يبقى إلا من أخذ الله عهده بولايتنا. Only those who hold fast to their ahd, to their mithaq, to their pledge with God concerning the love and the authority of the Ahlul Bayt. And وَكُتَبَ فِي قَلْبِهِ الْإِيمَانِ, and faith has been written in his heart. وَأَيَّدَهُ بِرُوحٍ مِّنْهَ, and those who are helped by God, who are maintained by God, only these people will maintain faith in Imam Mahdi. And again, we don't necessarily have to understand this as meaning that we verbally renounce Imam Mahdi. If we do not coordinate our lives in a way that is consistent with the belief in Imam Mahdi, with the love of Imam Mahdi, we do not actually believe. When you believe in something, okay, you believe if you don't work, you're not going to have money, you're going to lose your life. That is a genuine belief. You act according to that belief. All beliefs have practical ramifications. They have athar. They have consequences. So if we truly believe in Imam Mahdi, if we truly feel the pain of his absence, we must coordinate our lives in a way that would actually reflect this belief. And the rawayat of the Ahlul Bayt, those who actually succeed in implementing this belief, they are considered the best people of all time because of the difficulty of the times, because of the harsh situation, because of all the obstacles that obstruct one from practicing one's faith. The Rawat of the Ahlul Bayt tell us that those who actually implement this article of faith, this belief, they are the best people of all times. Okay. They are actually like those people who fought with Amir al-Mu'mineen when he was fighting to establish the rule. The rule of God. There is this account that after the battle of Nahrawan, after the Battle of Nahrawan, when Imam Ali fought the Khawarij, those who had rebelled against Imam Ali after the account of Siffin. Imam Ali said, God bless those, or actually someone else said, God bless us or the Shuhada who were here and who were present and who fought and who helped in defeating the Khawarij. Amir al-Mu'mineen said, and God also bless those whose fathers and forefathers are not yet born. Their fathers and forefathers are not yet born, but it is as though they are present here and fought with us here, with the Khawarij. And he was asked, who are these people? Who are these people that they're not here, they're not born yet, their fathers and forefathers are not born yet, but it is as though they are here with us fighting, and they were here with us, and they fought the Khawarij. And he said, they are the ones who will be born at the end of time. They will not see their Imam, but they will have faith in their Imam, and they will await his coming. They will await his coming. They will intidar al-faraj. They will await his coming. They, although they're not here with us today, but it is as though they were here fighting alongside the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And this is just, it's not just, brothers and sisters, it's not just hyperbole. It's not just an overstatement. Imam Ali is not just trying to make us feel good. Why did Imam Ali fight the Khawarij? What was the cause for which Imam Ali took power in the first place? It's the same cause for which all of the Ahlul Bayt struggled. And I've mentioned this before. The reason was to establish the rule of God on earth. That's the reason why Amir al-Mu'mineen fought the Khawarij at Nahrawan. And those Shias who harbor this pain, who genuinely hold this belief, they are doing the same thing. They are continuing with the same struggle. They are helping to establish the rule of Imam Mahdi. And that's why Imam Ali says they are like us fighting here. Because just as he was fighting to establish the rule of God, those Shias who, during the age of occultation, retain their love for Imam Mahdi and cherish and harbor this pain for his absence, and they coordinate their lives in accordance with this belief in the absence of Imam Mahdi and his coming in the future, in the near future, inshallah, they are continuing with the same struggle. They are doing the same thing. In order to give us more courage, inshallah, and more faith in this belief, I would like to read to you this riwayah from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. قال أبو عبد الله عليه السلام من مات منتظرا لهذا الأمر كمن كان مع القائم في فسطاته. One who dies in the age of occultation while he is actively awaiting the coming of Imam Mahdi. It is as though he is in the tent in the military base of Imam Mahdi, ready to fight alongside Imam Mahdi. من مات منتظرا لهذا الأمر. كمن كان مع القائم في فسطاته لا بل كان كالضارب بين يدي رسول الله بالسيف. More than that is, it is as though he or she is with the prophet, fighting alongside the prophet against the disbelievers. And it is for this reason that the concept of intidar al-faraj is so important to the Shia faith. Intidar al-faraj. As to what intidar al-faraj is and what actions constitute intidar al-faraj, inshallah I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. Today, tonight what I'd like to do for the remaining minutes of my speech is to debunk a false interpretation of intidar al-faraj, and then tomorrow we'll talk about what true intidar al-faraj is all about. There are those in the Shia community, and they're not few, unfortunately, who assume and believe that intidar al-faraj is either standing by and waiting for corruption to spread all over earth, actually being happy that corruption is spreading all over earth because they assume that this in some way hastens the reappearance of al-Mahdi. And there are even more extreme versions of the same people who say that we must actually facilitate corruption. Why? To hasten the reappearance of Imam Mahdi. Their reason, when we ask them what their reason is, their reason they say because we have in our riwayat that Imam Mahdi is going to reappear بعد ما ملئت ظلما وجورا. After Dhulm and Jawr takes place, after corruption and oppression takes hold of the entire world, Imam Mahdi is going to reappear. This is their main reason. بَعْدَمَا وَلِئَتْ ظُلْمًا وَجَوْرًا. First of all, this line of reasoning, brothers and sisters, goes against many of the ahkam that we have. Amr ma'aruf, nahi az munkar, enjoining good, forbidding evil is wajib. And there's many, many other ahkam that obviously go against this mentality and this interpretation. But another way that we can address this fallacy is by realizing and pointing out to these people that there is nowhere in the riwayat, when you read, there is no statement where it says بَعْدَمَا مُلِئَتْ ظُلْمًا وَجَوْرًا. The statement or the phrase that we have in our ad'iyah, in our supplications, and in our riwayat, is that is كَمَا مُلِئَتْ ظُلْمًا وَجَوْرًا. There's a big difference between the two sentences, between the two phrases. In other words, according to their interpretation, it says, this riwayah or this da'a says that Imam Mahdi is going to reappear after corruption and oppression has taken hold of the entire world. According to the riwayat and the ad'iyah, we believe that Imam Mahdi is going to uphold justice and spread justice around the world, just as kama, just as oppression had taken hold of the entire world. And oppression has taken hold of the entire world since the time of Imam Ali. It's not something new. It's the same thing. Corruption and sin and oppression has taken hold of the entire world. There are certain signs that are going to happen before the coming of Imam Mahdi. But the fact is that oppression and corruption has been around since the time of Imam Mahdi, has been in control of the world since the time of Imam Mahdi. If you read The history, for instance, of Imam Sajjad, putting aside the issue of wilaya, that and the fact that the Tawaqit were in charge of the government, which itself is, means oppression, had taken hold of the world. But putting that aside, when we read the history of the Ahlul Bayt, during the time of Imam Sajjad, brothers and sisters, Medina and Mecca, I don't think we can imagine this in our time and place. Medina and Mecca were rampant with corruption. Dance gatherings, parties, during the time of Imam Sajjad. Parties were the normal thing of life. When like a singer would come from other places of the Islamic world to Medina, all of the people of Medina would gather out, would come out to the streets to greet the singer. And drinking wine and going to parties, it was the normal thing of life. Okay. There is an account of I hope I can remember all the details. There's one person who goes to court. I forget whether it's Medina or Mecca. And then he says, he has an issue. He has an issue that he wants the judge to resolve. And then there has to be certain witnesses. The other side actually brings certain witnesses to court to prove this petitioner, to prove this person to be wrong. The guy who's brought his case to the court says, this witness, O judge, sir, this person that you brought to court, I've seen him drinking wine and going to, you know, parties. You know what the qazi tells this guy? He says, who doesn't do that? We all do that nowadays. At the time of Imam Sajjad. So the point is, brothers and sisters, the understanding, the general conception that somehow corruption is going to increase in a certain way at the end of time before the coming of Imam Mahdi, and then this spread and increase in corruption is the cause for Imam Mahdi's coming. This is a false understanding of the riwayat. As I said, there is nowhere that we encounter the phrase ba'da ma'wana. It's kama ma'wana. Okay. And it has been like this for the past over 1,000 years. And inshallah, this will change with the coming of Imam Mahdi. So this is a false interpretation of Faraj. Those Shias who unfortunately have bought into this mentality, have bought into this reasoning, are totally erred, they're totally wrong. And inshallah, we need to understand the meaning of Faraj through the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt themselves, inshallah ta'ala. اللهم عجل وليك الفرج والعافية والناصرة واجعلنا من خير أعوانه وأنصاره والمستشهدين بين يديه وهب لنا رأفته ورحمته ودعاءه وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين